Okay. Well, I'm basically going to begin with certain van der Moen determinants in one variable. I'm not going to immediately start with large deviations. I don't know. They did this to me. I hope that's okay. I want to consider the following sort of expression. All right. Here, this is the van der Moen determinant. So this is equal to these are just q's of functions of one variable raised to the nth power. There's a product of n of them, and the q should have a certain growth at infinity so that these exponentials decay at infinity. Okay. And I want to, at least initially, consider integrals and soups of such functions over n, and we're going to let n increase, so the dimension of the space or the number of variables is also increasing. Okay. And before I get into exactly remarks about them, I want to first sort of motivate things a bit. Sort of, how do these arise? probably one of the main impetus for these comes from random matrix theory. And I'll discuss this a bit now. First of all, if you have, we want to consider n by n permission random matrices. So a random matrix is just a matrix, but you put a probability space on the space of all matrices or the space of Hermitian matrices, and then you refer to elements as random matrices. And the probability distributions which you want to consider on the space of n by n Hermitian matrices are generally of the following form. This is the trace. So I will explain this. So TR is the trace. Q will generally be a polynomial. And to get decay at infinity, we'll assume it's of even degree. And leading coefficient, positive. The DM here refers to the vague measure, in the following setup, an n by n Hermitian matrix is determined by n squared real numbers. The n real numbers on the diagonal and the, say, the n squared minus n over 2 complex numbers above the diagonal. So they're the n by n Hermitians can be identified with a Euclidean space of dimension n squared, just as a vector space over R. And the DM is just the usual Lebesgue measure on this space. The Zn is a normalizing constant. It's a constant so that this is a probability measure. So when you integrate it, you will get 1. Okay. And okay, if you conjugate a Hermitian matrix by a unitary matrix, you can get it it's equivalent to our diagonal matrix, diagonal of the eigenvalues. And you can express this probability measure, if you sort of integrate out the unitary part, instead of being a probability measure on a space of dimension n squared, you can get a probability measure on a space of dimension n, and it's in fact given by precisely such a function. So this probability measure, when expressed in terms of the eigenvalues, is it's the following. So it's what I have there, except now there's a normalizing constant. And then you would get d lambda 1, d lambda n on Rn. So you get this probability measure. And if I just say denote this by Hn, then just to this constant is just the integral over Rn Hn of lambda. All right. This probability measure on the space of Hermitian matrices was, I guess, the original impetus goes back to the physicist Wigner about 50 years ago, and he was interested principally in the case when Q of m is m squared, and in that case, this probability measure is equivalent to each of the entries in the matrix being having an independent Gaussian distribution. And his motivation for considering properties of these eigenvalues of these random Hermitian matrices originated from some ideas in physics. If you had, say, a large molecule with many atoms and you wanted to study the energy levels, you could, in principle, write down whatever they do in quantum mechanics. You would get a Hermitian operator on an L2 space, and you have to find the eigenvalues. If your molecule is very complicated, getting the explicit form for the entries in the Hermitian matrix is not feasible. And Wigner's idea was, instead of trying to study the energy levels of this Hermitian matrix, Hermitian operator with complicated entries, study the eigenvalues of a random Hermitian matrix, n by n random Hermitian matrix with Gaussian entries, and so you're interested in the statistical properties of the eigenvalues. Of n by n Hermitian matrices, and you want to let n go to infinity. So that's one of the motivations for studying this type of question. And again, using that, using its background as coming from this model in mathematical physics, you're not maybe directly interested in this joint probability distribution, but you would like to know how many eigenvalues lie within a certain interval. So in mathematical terms, you would like to get the expected number, the expected value of the number of eigenvalues lying within an interval of reals, and so divided by n. So basically, what is the chance of seeing an energy level within a certain interval? Or you can have an arbitrary Borel set here if you want to make it very mathematical. So this motivates the following question, then. If So to get this, the number of eigenvalues, you integrate out n minus one of the variables.
Okay.
So you are interested in the following so this HN of lambda is just notation for this joint probability distribution. You integrate out n minus one of the variables, and I'll just write this one like this. And this is a probability distribution on R. And you're interested in what happens as n goes to infinity. So that'll give you this limiting value of this expected value. Let me just make a few other sort of few comments here. Again, in the case Q of m is m squared, the normalizing constant, Zn, it's a specific integral. So it's an integral over Rn of Vandermonde squared times e to the minus n, then it'll just be the square of lambda 1 and so forth. That specific integral is, so this is in the case where Q is Q of m is m squared. This is what is known as a Selberg integral, a particular case of these Selberg integrals. There was a recent issue of the Bulletin of the American Mathematical Society where there are a number of articles, sort of memorial for Selberg, and one of the articles was called The Importance of the Selberg Integral, and gave a lot of situations in which these integrals came up. And Selberg was the one who gave an explicit formula in this case for these Selberg integrals. So there was an explicit formula involving gamma functions, various products of gamma functions. And for many years, people in random matrix theory, to study the asymptotics, they used this explicit formula, and then used Stirling's formula to get the asymptotics of the gamma function. For many years, they didn't even realize, they weren't aware of Selberg's work, too. In any event, the asymptotic properties of this number come from potential theory fairly easily, which I'll get to. Okay. Another situation in which integrals like this arise, and these sort of considerations where you have these sort of considerations arise, was the following. So let me just go here. In the late 70s and 80s, people who worked in orthogonal polynomials, they wanted to study asymptotics of orthogonal polynomials. Again, just in one variable, and with respect to a weight, maybe I shouldn't call this Q, with respect to weight e to the minus x to the alpha for positive numbers alpha. Of course, if alpha is 2, so this would be dx on R. If alpha is 2, you just get the classical Hermite polynomials. So the orthogonal polynomials you would therefore get by minimizing for the polynomial of degree n, you could sort of take a monic polynomial of degree n, and you would want one which minimized such an integral. It turned out that if you scale, and so this was developed by Saf and various collaborators. If you scale, you get, I mean, trivially, you will get the problem of minimizing this over monic polynomials of degree n is equivalent to minimizing this integral, where here you get a weight which depends on n, and so you're interested in L2 of e to the minus n x to the alpha dx, and potential theory can be brought into play for some of the asymptotic results. P tilde is just here you have a monic polynomial. Yeah, you sort of, the coefficients are multiplied by various things. So the so I'll now set up a slightly more general integrals here, still in one variable. So I'll begin with E, a compact set in the plane, W, a weight function, which we can take to be continuous and positive, and B nu, this will be a Borel measure on E. There's maybe some other mild restrictions on E, should have positive capacity. Anyways, one or two sort of technical points. If you consider the following L2 space, so the L2 space, it depends on n, so it's the weight raised to the 2nth power d nu. I want to show that if you look at the Bergman Zego kernel for these spaces as n goes to infinity, you get involved in the same sort of asymptotics as over here. Okay, so if you take the monomials, so that's 1 up to degree n, so 1 z up to zn, and you use the Gram-Schmidt procedure, you will get orthonormal polynomials, q0, qn. Okay. And if you form, this is, I guess, the diagonal. D nu, call this kn of zz. This function, so at each stage n, you have your n plus 1 orthonormal polynomials. The measure changes, it's w to the 2n. This thing, just by definition of orthogonality, this is a probability measure. This is a probability measure. This thing integrates to 1. Each of these are orthogonal with respect to this, so this integrates to n plus 1. This integrates 1, so this is again a probability measure on C. Okay. If you consider, instead of this inner product, if you replace that by qj of z, qj of c conjugate, you would get the reproducing kernel for that L2 space for polynomials up to degree n. So it's a natural thing to consider, and it gives asymptotics of this will give you some information about the asymptotics of the orthogonal polynomials here. Okay. Now it's fairly simple to see that this these probability measures here and these probability measures here are the same. They're the same with the proviso, first of all, lambda 1 you have to replace with z, and here it's just with the reals, but E could also be, if E is a subset of the reals, they will coincide. And I think the N here, you maybe have to identify with N plus 1 there. Anyway, just, okay. So the question of the asymptotic limit of these probability measures is the same as the asymptotic limit of these probability measures. For the proof of the equivalence, you would just, the expression here involves the van der Monde, you would just use row operations to bring the entries in the van der Monde matrix to be these orthogonal polynomials. You would then expand the van der Monde matrix and use the orthogonality relations, do the same thing in the expression for Zn, and you can compare things term by term and you get this expression. So the asymptotics of these probability measures and is the same as the asymptotics of these Bergmann-Zegel kernels on the diagonal. All right. So now the question is, what are theorems? So most of these are classical and well known. So we have the following theorems. These probability MNs, or more properly the KNs, converge to a certain weighted equilibrium measure. I guess I'm doing it here these are the weights are the functions e to the minus q with decay at infinity, but you're dealing with the entire reals, which is non-compact. It's essentially equivalent to consider a compact case, which, so I will just state the results in this case. This convergence is weak star as n goes to infinity. I will say what this measure is in a moment. So the second result is again, weak star as n goes to infinity. This is a sum of Dirac delta measures. This XIF are what are called Fekete points. They are points which maximize, or where the function HN, which involves the van der Monde times the product of the weights, where this function can be maximized on e to the n. So you take points where it achieves its maximum, you form this sum of the Dirac delta measures, it converges to the weighted equilibrium measure. And the third result is that when you look at the normalizing constants raised to the 1 over n squared, this, as n goes to infinity, this goes to a limit, which I will just call a limit depending on E, and it's related to energy. A weighted energy. Okay, so these are one variable results. I will just give, say what that measure is. If you use the electrostatic model of potential theory, so we'll consider E as a compact set in the plane, it's a conductor, the equilibrium measure physically can be thought of. If you put a unit charge of electricity on such a set as a conductor, it'll, under the mutual repulsion, will distribute itself into a measure, the equilibrium measure. The weighted equilibrium measure, you just consider the same setup, but you have an external field which is determined by the weight W. It's actually I guess, Laplacian of minus log of W. Any event, and then the charge will no longer stay at the equilibrium measure if there is no external field. It redistributes itself, and that's that equilibrium measure. Okay. Let's see. Yes. And so a few other comments here. This measure, d nu, cannot be completely arbitrary, but should satisfy a Bernstein, what is called the Bernstein-Markov inequality. In effect, most measures, sort of quote, most measures satisfy it. And what you need here is that if you look at functions of the following sort, the weight to a power times a polynomial of degree at most n, then the L2 norm with respect to nu and the L infinity norm raised to the 1 over nth power should be asymptotically the same. All right. Let's see. So a few more comments on this. If you go back to Wigner's original problem, where the weight is e to the minus x squared, the equilibrium measure, you get what it's usually referred to as Wigner's semicircle law. And in this case, the equilibrium measure with respect to this weight, it is... so it's the limit of the measures is the probability measure whose distribution looks like this. This is actually, I'm not sure, minus x squared or maybe minus x squared over 2. So the equilibrium measure is just square root of 2 minus x squared over pi characteristic function. For the case of those studied by people in approximation theorem, the measure is explicitly known. The equilibrium measure is explicitly known. I won't write it down. They're motivated by the applications in random matrix theory. There is a lot of work finding explicit information about these weighted equilibrium measures. Okay. And there was work of Percy Daft and various collaborators using stationary phase method and what is called Riemann-Hilbert methods. Anyway, it's fairly intricate methods in analysis which they developed, and they got fairly explicit information on the weighted equilibrium measure in the case Q is a polynomial, again, even degree, positive leading coefficients. It turned out the case studied by the people in approximation theory, this function here, because of the convexity of this function, the support of the measure is a single interval, but where this polynomial, the polynomial has various more than one minimum, it's fairly difficult, and they have a lot of very explicit information, which I'm not going to go into. All right. Now, also very recently, we have had some multivariable versions of these theorems 1, 2, and 3, and a lot more. So this is work of Berman, Buxom, and other collaborators. And he will be speaking about that very shortly. I want to discuss some aspects of the several variable case. So I have to say, in fact, what do you mean by generalizing these to several variables? So let me just begin with that. So I'll begin with E, a compact set in CN, and W, a weight, say continuous and positive, and E should have some mild conditions on it here. Shouldn't be pluripolar, regular, okay. All of these expressions involve a van der Moen determinant, which I'll now refer to as the van der Moen determinant in one variable, although of course it depends on n variables. For the multivariable van der Moen determinant, it'll proceed as follows. So this will be a van der Moen. So it'll have a certain, I will use this notation. It'll be given as a determinant. And you construct it as follows. You consider the monomials of degree less than or equal to n in n variables. And we let t be the number of these monomials. And so, in fact, that is given by the following binomial coefficient. And we will label them E1 through E sub t. So you take all the t monomials and you evaluate them at t different points in CN. You form the determinant. So this is what I refer to as the multivariable van der Moen determinant. Of course, this, unlike the one variable case, this does not factor in some charming and useful way. So it just stuck there. And we want to again consider integrals and properties similar to that function, but now with the multivariable van der Moen determinant. So we have, I will let Hn of lambda be the van der Moen of lambda 1 through lambda t squared e to the minus W of lambda 1 to the 2n, W of lambda n, lambda t to the 2n, whoop. And then some measure. Okay. All right. I will not completely state all the results of Berman and Buxom. They're not just for compact sets in CN, they're for Cayley manifolds. So quickly summarized, all these results hold in several variables and others. And so I've stated what the van der Moen has to be replaced by, and I will now state. So that tells you, in fact, what Fekete points should be. The Fekete points would be points which maximize this Hn function on a large product of E. And the weighted equilibrium measure should be replaced by, in the several variable case, should be replaced by the weighted equilibrium measure in several variables, which is given by the Mogeon pair operator on a certain extremal plurisubharmonic function. This function is the pointwise soup of all plurisubharmonic functions with logarithmic growth at infinity and smaller than or equal to q on the set E. In any event, it's a measure supported on E in particular. And then, roughly speaking, those results hold true. And in fact, in Berman's work, there essentially you get a formula for this. Sorry? Q, yeah, sorry, here, Q is minus log W. Okay. So we could define on subsets of E to the product T, where T depends on N, a probability measure now, 1 over Zn, integral over A, so this is the probability of A, Hn of lambda, d nu of lambda 1 through d nu of lambda T. All right, and I want to discuss large deviations for this sequence of probability measures. Okay. Now, large deviations. There's large deviations and there's large deviations. You can ask for the. You can ask to get a precise rate functional. Or you can just get general results saying that this measure is small away from points where the function achieves its maximum. Okay. So I'm going to begin with one such large deviation, and then I have some at least partial results on the what you might call the real large deviation result. So so this first large deviation result, so we have a large deviation result. This is not the strictest one, but it does give the rate of decrease. So this result was proven in 1998 by Johansson, who is he's a probabilist based in Stockholm or yeah. He proving in the situation in random matrices, he proved statement one. He didn't use he used a bit of potential theory, but he first proved this large deviation result and then used it to prove an appropriate version of statement one as used in random matrix theory. In a paper of myself and Levenberg, we gave a multivariable version, so I will just state it. Now, a multivariable version is the following. You have An gamma is the set of all lambda where my small ln, is the degree of this multivariable van der Monde as a function of all the variables. So it is the sum of the degrees of the monomials of degree less than or equal to n. I mean, you could give a simple binomial expression for it. It is of order, it's a constant times small n to the n plus 1 plus. So that's the basic order of growth of it. Then the statement is that, this statement will combine, I'll give the multivariable version, but when you put when you consider one variable, van der Moen's, you get Johansson's statement, more or less. So the probability of the, so these are the points where the function the involving the multivariate van der Moen's is close to its maximum value. And it says, when you look at the complement of that, this is less than or equal to 1 minus gamma over 2 delta W of E to the 2ln for all n greater than n0 of gamma. So this gives a rate of decrease. It's no longer n squared. It's n to a higher power. So it gives you at least a rate of decrease in what is admittedly a sort of weaker large deviation result. I mean, but in the case of one variable, it was useful in proving these results and so forth. The proof of this just involves the fact that, let's see, so this is the this HN function. ZN was the integral of that function, and the proof involves just the fact that the limit on n of Zn to the 1 over 2ln, so this is a multivariable case, is the limit n if you maximize the Hn of lambdas, so it gets maximized over e to the t raised to the 1 over 2ln, and both these limits exist. That's sort of what you need, and these are automatic. The fact that these two limits are the same is an immediate, essentially immediate consequence of the Bernstein-Markov property of the measure mu, which enters in here when you do the integrals of the Hn to get the Zn. The fact the existence of these limits is a little bit, or the existence, so therefore the existence of any one of these limits is a little bit trickier. Berman has very nice formulas for essentially these limits in terms of Monge-Ampère operators and so forth. But anyway, we proved just the existence of these limits directly. That gave this large deviation result. All right. However, I want to discuss the kind of, I don't know what you call it, the strict large deviation result according to the rules laid down by Varadhan for these integrals. This is work in progress, and so using Zeldich's disclaimer, perhaps some of the hypotheses and conclusions have to be changed a bit, but in any event. We now have the set E and CN. We'll consider the M of E, the Borel probability measures on E, with the weak star topology, which is metrizable. And what you are looking for, so what you want is the following. If you fix a measure mu, you want the infimum of G, a neighborhood of mu, the limit as n goes to infinity, 1 over ln. Ln is this numerical, it's this number here. So this is essentially n, small n to the capital N plus 1, log the integral over g tilde tn to be a certain rate functional. Now g tilde, so g is a neighborhood of mu in the space of Borel measures. G tilde, I guess it's some kind of push forward of configuration space, but you can just think of it as this G tilde is the set of all lambda in e to the t, where 1 over t summation delta of lambda I, so the Dirac delta measures are in G. So this is a set in e to the t. You integrate over that set, you do this, And this would be, you want a rate functional. The way I have it set up here, I don't have the minus sign, so you want this to have a unique, to be negative, except at one particular point where it should have a unique maximum. And this is sort of a double limit. You really mean taking the upper limit and the lower limit, and they have to agree and so forth. Okay. So I want to just discuss some results which I'm sort of are incomplete and I'm writing up, and I will just do it without the weights. We'll just do that to make it simpler, a bit simpler. And the for the rate functional, I want the following. So given your measure mu, you consider the following. So this is essentially what defines G tilde. You consider sums of Dirac delta measures converging to mu weak star as n goes to infinity. Recall t depends on n, so for every small n you take t of n monomials and so forth and do this. And we then want to consider the upper limit of the van der Monde of x1 through xt raised to the 1 over Lm. So that makes it homogeneous. So you want to consider the upper limit over all such sequences. Say you call this J of mu. And you want E to be the support of the measure, and the XIs, say, should be an E. You have to consider the upper limit, because without affecting the weak star limit of the sums of Dirac delta measures, you could change two of these points and make them very close together, which would make this van der Monde very small. So it's just the upper limit. Okay. Now, it's in fact a consequence of the work of Berman and collaborators that this functional has a unique maximum. So there's a unique maximum when mu is the equilibrium measure of the set. Okay. So if you let I of mu be J of mu minus J of the equilibrium measure. Oh, I might say in the case of the equilibrium measure, this is just, you would just consider all such Dirac delta measures and all such van der Mondes, and it's known that the upper limit is what is called the transfinite diameter of the set E. So this is the transfinite diameter of E. Sorry, this should be log. Okay. So this should be log J of mu minus the log of the transfinite diameter. I will write it as J of mu eq. This functional has, it's negative. It has a unique maximum at this point. Now, I can't prove this for all measures, but I can prove it for certain measures. Generally, I can prove it for measures which are in the range of the Monge-Ampère operator on Cn, and where you have a certain stability. So if mu is in the range of the Monge-Ampère operator, uh, Well, I think I'll again use the notation Q. It really basically coincides with the way I was using the Q before. If mu is, so this is the Monge-Ampère operator on Q, where Q is in L plus, which means it's plurisubharmonic with logarithmic growth of infinity. It's this is kind of at the, as I understand it, this is kind of at the frontier of Monge-Ampère technology. It's not absolutely clear. The results are not, I think, complete as to which measures can be written this way, and I also need some stability, so I want smoothing. So you can consider, you can approximate your measure by smoothing it, and you would want then it's definitely in the range of the Monge-Ampère operator. The question is, as epsilon goes to zero, when this measure converges to this weak star, you want the Q epsilons to converge to Q, and that seems to be a bit of a, not quite known. In any event, it's certainly true if the measure mu is a smooth function times Lebesgue measure with compact support. You can get such a result. And one of the interesting things for me, which turned up, is that in this case, the rate functional is n plus 1 integral over k q d mu plus can be written in this way, where this script e, or is that the beautiful E? Is that how you refer to it? It comes up a lot of places. I'm sure Robert will speak about this in a little while. It involves Monge-Ampère, sort of a combination of Monge-Ampère of these two functions, and this other term. This combination comes up in Berman's work in the way I, at least the paper I saw, it's a somewhat different context, but it pops right out here. And this functional in Berman's paper, when mu is essentially such an image, he shows, if I've got the things with the right sign, that this is, again, less than or equal to zero, and it achieves, if you considered q as a variable, it achieves the maximum when q is exactly the, this should be E, when Q is the pluricomplex Green function of E. But as I said, I only have this in for certain measures mu. Okay, that's